Listen up, Detroit. The Zone Radio with Richardson, D.C. is moving on November 30th to Monday nights. Get it right. Detroit's official underground hip-hop spot will now be on for 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. on Monday nights on the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM. Stream audio and tune in on www.WHFR.FM on the web. See you on Mondays, y'all.
No time for breakfast? Don't worry. We've got you covered. The Skylight Cafe opens daily 7 a.m. to satisfy your hungry appetite. How about some fresh made-to-order breakfast sandwiches? Potatoes O'Brien with grilled onions, scrambled eggs with toast and sausage, or some fresh orange juice or a hot cup of coffee. No time for lunch? Don't worry. We got you covered. Our soup and salad bar will delight your senses. How about a slice of hot pepperoni and cheese pizza? Or a juicy grilled burger with fries? Along with all of your favorite beverages and desserts, the Skylight Cafe has got you covered for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So save time and that precious gas in your car. Don't run around town looking for something to eat. Head on over to the Skylight Cafe located in the Student Center building. We're open daily 7 a.m. to serve you. When it comes to your appetite, the Skylight Cafe has got you covered.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Now, last month, the movie The Fourth Kind was released, and it explores the hypnotic regressions of several subjects in Alaska who claim they have been abducted by alien beings. Although it is a dramatization, the film's producers claim to have documented evidence of the actual hypnosis sessions on which the film is based. For the diehard skeptic, the movie is nothing more than another attempt by Hollywood to frighten and entertain their audience. But for the literally hundreds of thousands of citizens worldwide who have endured such intrusions, it is a stark reality that is being portrayed and relived on the silver screen. And for those who insist that alien abduction scenarios are nothing more than a sleep disorder, they have never heard the whole story of daytime abductions that are witnessed by others. One such individual is Karina Sables of British Columbia, Canada. And she has been an alien experiencer since childhood, and this living nightmare continues for her and now for her children to this day. Karina is the author of the book, The Collectors, where she shares her frightening encounters, and we are happy to have her with us today on the line. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, Karina.
Well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. And yourself?
Good, thank you.
Good, good. Very cold up there in Canada?
No, actually, it's been more like spring in the last couple of days. It's been wonderful.
I think it's this goofy kind of weather that they allude to as the the global warming. What do you think?
Yes, I believe so. We've had very strange weather patterns, I would say, for the last 2 years now.
Yeah, really. Not only in Canada, but all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I've read the book, The Collectors. Very interesting book. Very frightening in some spots. And very endearing throughout the entire book. Tell me now, Karina, when did you when did these abduction experiences begin for you?
Well, my very first recollection for me was probably between 4 and 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it began with I would be going to bed at night, and I was always felt very frightened and would ask my parents to leave the lights on, to please check for monsters under my bed and in my closets. And, you know, my parents kept saying, she must be having some kind of nightmares or something, going through a bad phase of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to tell them, no, there's little monsters that come in my room at night.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen would this bright bluish-white light would come through the bedroom window, light up my whole bedroom, and then this very scary face would be standing there. And, you know, what as I came to know in my late 30s as the face of a gray. But as a child, of course, at that age, I had no idea what was going on. It was just absolutely terrifying for me, because every time I would try and explain to my parents that these monsters had come the night before, it was the same, you know, answer. Well, it was probably a nightmare, or it was a wildcat from the forest out back, you know. Mm. Don't worry about it. It will go away. Mm. Well, it never went away, so.
Never went away. How do you mean it never went away? Was it omnipresent, or?
Things just kept happening again and again, and then, like I say, I was probably around 5 years old. My brother was 2 years younger than me. And, you know, an example, there was this one place where we lived back east in Quebec, and I remember one day, it was in the middle of the day, it was a nice summer day, and my brother and I went out to play in the park, which was located right in front of our house across the street, and we had just gotten at the park, and all of a sudden I felt this very strange humming in my abdomen. It wasn't something you could hear, it was more something that you could feel, like when a large truck drives by.
Mm.
And I looked, and there was no trucks, no vehicle, you know, going by like that. And my brother looked at me funny, and he said, you felt that, didn't you? And I said, yes, I did. There's a strange humming in my belly. And he said, what's with all the people? Why are they pointing up like that? And we looked up, and above us was this flying, hovering saucer, just sitting there. And it was, you know, middle of the daytime, so lots of people, lots of eyewitnesses had time to, you know, to look at it, and some people that lived close by even went into their homes to grab their cameras and had time to come out and take a picture of it.
Do you recall what year that was?
It probably would have been around 60, either 66 or 67.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there seemed to be a lot of UFO activity around then, 67.
Mm-hmm.
My sighting was in 62, but during the 60s there were a lot of sightings. How old were you at the time?
I believe I was around 10 years old. My brother would have been 8.
Mm-hmm.
And my father at the time worked at a very fancy hotel there called Manoir Richelieu, which is a very famous hotel. For VIPs, and it was probably about, I guess, 5 or 6 blocks from our house, if that. And he came home that night and said, you know, you kids won't believe what Dad saw today. And I said, well, you won't believe what we saw. And then, you know, realized that it was probably the same thing.
Right.
And apparently this thing had gone over the hotel where he worked, and was actually hovering there for almost 45 minutes. So a lot of people got to see it.
45 minutes. Now, were there, I don't know, you were 10 at the time, right?
Yes.
But maybe you had spoken to your dad or since. Is Dad still with us or no?
Yes.
You must have spoken with your dad and asked if any authorities came on the scene.
No, I was too young to think of something like that. Mm-hmm. However, did find out that there was always this man on location at this hotel, because like I say, very famous people used to come and stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a gentleman there that used to take videos, but in those days it was film.
Right.
You know, it was different.
Right.
Anyway, he used to take films of people that would, famous people that would come in and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular day, he was there with his daughter, I believe it was his daughter. And he did see it and apparently took a bit of film of it.
Mm-hmm.
So after 30-some years, I located this man. And he said, yes, I do remember. But, he was very old when I did finally reach him.
Mm-hmm.
And not doing too well medically. So I asked him, I said, is there any way that you can possibly, you know, find this piece of footage and possibly, like, send it to me or a copy of it? And he said, yes, no problem. If I can find it, you can have it. And unfortunately, he passed away.
Oh, no.
So when I called, I got his wife on the phone. She said, I'm sorry, he's passed away. And I don't know any of that stuff, she said. So it kind of went that way. And, you know, skeptics are going to say, oh, same old story. You know, something always gets lost or whatever. But it's the truth. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Even if the individual has the film, the skeptics are going to say, oh, you know, I can do that on my computer.
That's right.
You know,
there's always something. So.
Yeah. Getting back to when you were a child, you talked about these monsters coming in your room. You know, a lot of children, trying to play devil's advocate here, a lot of children are afraid of some monsters under the bed or leave the light on, yada, yada, you know, like that,
mm-hmm.
where there's really, really nothing there, just afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
But in the movie The Fourth Kind, and in many scenarios of abductees, a lot of the subjects would see an owl at their window,
mm-hmm.
or a deer, some mm-hmm. animal with large black eyes, and recall this animal. Did you see an animal or an owl or anything like that?
Well, my father would always, you know, as I said, say it was a nightmare, or the kitty from the forest behind our place, and I would always come back, but Daddy, the kitty had no ears. You know, it had no ears, it had no fur, it just had these big black eyes. Now, I understand what you mean, though, about seeing some kind of animal. My sister does remember when she was 4 years old, waking up one night and finding me gone from my bed and going to the window, which was actually the door to go out on the balcony from our bedroom. And she said she remembers seeing a very scary dog growling in the window. She said it just terrified her, but she said then it turned into something else.
Hmm. And how old was your sister?
She was about 4 years old.
Okay, and then it turned into something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She didn't say what?
She just said that it was something with large black eyes, and then she got terrified. She won't talk about things. She refuses to discuss things.
Hmm. Even today?
Yes. Yeah, she does not want to talk about it.
Have you tried to convince her that conversing about it would be therapeutic?
Yes.
And she says?
Absolutely not.
I laugh, but
I
that's
go there.
I laugh, but that's there. Not funny, is it? It's kind of sad, but
no.
She doesn't want to go there. Mm.
I have to say, I mean, there's times with my children and I, we need to reach out to each other and we need to talk about it. And yet, for some reason, there's other times it's like we really don't want to talk about it. And we've got this fear factor that just wells up inside of us and we can't discuss it. We refuse to discuss it. So you kind of go back and forth. It's I don't know what it is about this subject or phenomenon, but there's times we need to talk about it, and there's other times, no way, we want to forget about it.
Yeah. Have you ever, you know, a lot of abductees say it's been planted in my brain that I am not to speak about it. And as soon as I start to speak about it, I get physically ill or my mind goes blank or whatever. Do you have that same thing?
Not all the time, but I have to admit that that has happened to me in the past.
Well, what is your...
I was told I was not allowed, I would not be allowed to remember, I would not be allowed to say anything about what I had seen. And I remember thinking in my mind, because they did this telepathically, and I remember thinking in my mind, you don't know me very well yet. Hmm. I can be quite stubborn sometimes, and I am going to remember this, and I will talk about it. And it was a while, it took me a while to put the pieces together, but I did remember this one specific incident. And I believe I talked about it in my book, and it was actually a large column in the middle, in the center of this huge room on a ship, which had hundreds and hundreds of what I would call, for lack of a better word, drawers, long drawers in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it still scares me to this day, because I don't know what he meant, but the one, what I call in charge, basically told me in the end that what was in the drawers was the essence of man.
The essence of man.
Oh, my God, the essence of man. Does he mean, what does he mean? Does he mean our soul? Does he mean our spirit, our DNA, sperm, eggs? What is he talking about?
Hmm.
And so, you know, I mean, to this day, I can't tell you what he meant by that, but I know that it doesn't sit right with me.
Were you able to look into these drawers?
No, I was pulled away.
Ah.
I was taken away.
Now, are these conscious memories for you, or have you been regressed?
This is as conscious as you can get. I have not been hypnotized into anything that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I remember everything on my own.
So, describe for our listeners the inside of the craft, the interior of the craft. Are they always the same, or?
No. They've been quite different. In some of them, I've been put on a very cold metal table, which was in a sort of it always seems to be a circular room for some reason, and always more often than not, it's a subdued lighting, and you can't tell where these lights are, the lighting is coming from.
Hmm.
That was a smaller type room. The one with the column in the center was a very large room, as was the one where I saw hundreds and hundreds of aquarium type looking things where very small fetuses were inside them, which looked like they were part human and part gray.
Hmm.
That was quite frightening. And I remember that as I'm looking at everything around me right now. It's very vivid, very real. This is not a dream.
At the time, you say right now, you mean at the time?
Yes.
Okay. So at the time you're looking around you and you were conscious of the fact that it wasn't a dream, how did you know that it wasn't a dream?
Now I know that it wasn't a dream, and I knew then because I could smell, I could touch, I could feel. There's a difference between when you dream and when you're actually really experiencing something.
Right.
There's a definite difference. And, I mean, I knew I was awake. I was not asleep.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a little bit odd when you're, if you were asleep, to be able to say this is a dream and not wake up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't believe I have ever done that. Mm-hmm. in a dream. Be able to say, oh, this is a dream, and just keep on dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe some people can do that, but I've never heard of it.
No.
Most of the time, people just, you know, don't really know it's a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, then describe the typical onset of an abduction, be it. Let's talk about when it's at night, when you're in bed.
Well, to be quite honest with you, most of the time when it has happened at night, I'm not even asleep yet. I'm still awake. My eyes are, I've closed my eyes and I'm thinking about the day and about tomorrow and things like that. So I'm still awake. I'm still hearing sounds in the house. I'm whatever. I'm still aware of everything around me.
Right.
And as I'm going to sleep, all of a sudden there will be like a paralyzed feeling kind of thing where I hear something in the house. I feel a presence. I know that they're there, and I go to open my eyes. I can open my eyes, but I can't move my body. All I can do is move my eyes around, and I either see them, or right away I'm totally put out. And then when I come to, I'm usually on the table, or I will be waking up in the morning in my bed. However, my nightie may be on inside out or maybe on backwards or a few hours have gone and it, you know, it feels like it was not that long, that kind of thing. So there's different things that will happen. Also, I've woken up with burns on my body, bruises on my body, cuts, on my throat area, perfect triangular marks, all kinds of things like that. For an example, July 31st, 2003, here in Kelowna, a girlfriend and I went out stargazing, and to make the long story short, very quickly, as soon as we got out of the vehicle, she said to me, there's something strange going on. There's three stars, formed in a triangular formation up here, and they're flying in a strange formation, and they're right above the car.
Mm-hmm.
He said, stars don't do that. What is that? Oh, probably helicopters or something. Don't worry about it. But, again, to make it short, is what it was there was actually a craft up there, which was like a bright neon green oval-shaped craft, which seemed to go from circular to oval, but remained like a bright neon green. Now, there were many, many eyewitness reports to this in that area at the same time of morning by many different people. We woke up with burn marks on our, radiation burn marks on our bodies, bruises. We went, both of us lost, I think it was between 45 and 60 pounds within 3 months. We did a lot of throwing up, nausea, losing hair. We both have very long hair and lost most of our hair. A lot of medical things happen. The potassium levels kept crashing. Liver enzymes were high. I ended up in the hospital actually for a week.
You're talking about radiation poisoning.
I guess I am.
Were you
tested?
I wasn't
about to tell the doctors to check for that, though. They probably would have put me in a loony bin.
Well, it would say, if a doctor checked you out, I would think he would say, you know what, you've got radiation poisoning.
No, they didn't. The only thing that was ever mentioned as radiation was my girlfriend went back to Vancouver. She went to see a different doctor, and that doctor said to her, if I didn't know any better, this looks almost like a radiation burn.
Mm-hmm.
But that couldn't be. How could you have that? So he said, we'll just treat it with this cream. And if you start, getting high fevers and things, you come back and see me, and I'll check you out again. That was it.
I've got to take a quick break just to remind our listeners that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Karina Sables of British Columbia, Canada. And she is author of The Collectors, and she has been a lifelong alien abductee. And let's get right back to her. We're talking about this possible radiation poisoning. It certainly sounds like... Now, the doctor said, if I didn't know any better, I would say you had radiation burn, right?
Yeah.
Now, maybe... I'm not, I haven't seen you or the, I'm not a doctor. I haven't seen you or the other gal that had this. But at the same time, is it possible that the doctor just thought, you know, there's no way that these people could have radiation poisoning, so even though the symptoms look like it, I'm not even going to go there?
Well, that's exactly what happened, I'm sure. We do have some pictures up on my website that people can look at, which is part of the radiation burn my girlfriend had on her back.
Okay.
As it was healing a little bit, it had healed some, but there is a picture of it on there.
What is your website for our listeners?
It's thecollectorsonline.com.
Thecollectorsonline.com.
Yes.
Okay. And, okay, let's go. I'm so, you've confused me here with this radiation or whatever it was you had. It just sounds like radiation poisoning. Did you suspect that?
Well, I mean, sure, we were losing all our hair, and I kept saying to my other friends, I said, it's like I'm going through chemotherapy. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know, the nausea, the loss of hair, the loss of weight. Everything pointed to either going through chemotherapy or having gone through some kind of radiation poisoning.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like it. Very similar happened to in the Cash Landrum case. Are you familiar with the Cash Landrum case in Texas?
I believe so. If it's the fellow that woke up with radiation burn on his chest?
No, this is a woman and her mother and and a little boy. And they were stopped by a huge diamond-shaped UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman, the one woman, got out of the car and felt this terrific heat. But they could feel the heat in the car. And she had radiation poisoning and ultimately died from it.
Oh,
and,
my.
Not to scare you. I mean, it sounds like I trust that you have gotten better from that experience.
Yes, from that one I did.
Okay, because this lady never really got better. She just got worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
So even with radiation poisoning, like I say, not to scare you, because even with radiation poisoning, once you've healed, you'll be all right. But
you're never the same again.
Never the same again. You know, it's like with, like you were saying, chemotherapy.
A lot of health issues since that time.
Yeah.
And the last experience, the last event that happened was actually the July the 30th of this year for me. Unfortunately, I was alone, and it was through the night, so I have no witnesses on that one, except the next day when a couple of girlfriends saw the burn on my face, and things just went downhill from there. I had severe pressure in my head once again, like the last time in 2003, and finally ended up going to see a doctor because I started having these weird episodes, and she informed me that I was now experiencing small seizures. And I said, well, you know, that can't be. How can you get that overnight? She said, well, you are having small seizures. And same thing, I'm losing a lot of hair. I've got a lot of nausea. My thyroid has crashed. So quite suddenly all this weight is coming on. I'm very tired. There's all kinds of things going on again. So it's very frustrating, very frustrating.
Yeah. You mentioned seizures now. How long have you been having these seizures?
Since that night.
Just this year, though?
Yes, and then in 2003, I had a severe pressure in my head and experienced small seizure activity after that experience, but it only lasted for about a month or so, and then it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having the same thing again this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some people say that some of this abduction business is frontal lobe epilepsy. They like to say that. Yeah, I laugh too because I know pretty much what I have never, thank God, never experienced an epileptic seizure. However, I know one who has. And to my knowledge now, if there's a doctor listening or epileptic listening that knows otherwise, please let me know. You can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. Please let me know. But I think that they really don't remember anything after the, during these seizures. They don't they don't see little guys with the big black
That's
eyes.
Right. And we're not talking grand malls here. We're, you know, we're just talking like they're petite malls. They're,
right.
It's like it's not something that even someone who doesn't know that you're having one would even notice half the time.
Right. And even with petite mall, now petite mall, you can have a missing time where you'd be sitting there and all of a sudden you're staring off into space.
No.
And when you come back to your senses, you realize a half hour has passed, whatever amount of time has passed.
Mm-mm.
You say, I have missing time. But in that case, if someone is near, they will see you sitting there having this seizure staring off into space. Now, how does that differ from your missing time scenarios?
No. You see, what happens when I have one of these episodes, which they call seizures, which are they calling seizures, is I will sometimes, not always, smell like something is burning, okay? And then feel a little bit funny, have pressure in my head all the time, some nausea, but that's it.
Hmm.
That is absolutely it. I don't lose any time. I don't miss any time.
Hmm.
When I've had missing time is like when a friend of mine and I in 2003, for example, I had the ship above us, and then all of a sudden five of these beings were standing on the road coming at us. We were there at a certain time, and this happened right away within 5 to 7 minutes of us being there and getting out of the car. And the next thing we know, we're turning around to go home, and she said, "Oh, my God, stop the car. This can't be." She said, "We just got here. Look at the clock. Look at the time." Something about that there was an hour difference or something like that. And I said, "Well, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what, for an hour we don't know what happened to us? That's ridiculous. We're on the side of the road."
Mm.
I didn't want to accept, you know, the possibility of something like that having happened to us.
Yeah, now see, this is the difference between a petite mall seizure and an alien abduction scenario, in that that individual would be observed just sitting there staring off into space for a half hour in a petite mall seizure. But wouldn't it be awfully coincidental if you and your friend had a petite mall seizure that lasted the exact same amount of time?
Exactly.
You know, or any kind of seizure for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever been abducted where either the abduction was witnessed or someone there has noticed you missing?
On several different occasions.
Tell us a couple of them.
Well, the 2003 experience, for example, with my girlfriend and I, including in one of the eyewitnesses reports to Brian Vike up north here in Canada, some man phoned him and said, without knowing about our experience, he explained that him and his daughter were very hot that night, and they went out on their balcony at exactly that time when this thing was above our vehicle, and we had this missing time. And he said, you know, he said, "We saw the strangest thing. I thought I should contact you." He said there was this green, neon green glowing object above the landfill in Kelowna. And he said, all of a sudden this beam came down. And he said, "We saw the a ship land." He said, "We saw it land. My daughter and I really saw this."
Mm.
And then it went back up. Well, he didn't know anything about us.
Hmm.
So that was definitely something very real.
So this is the exact same time when you and your girlfriend believe you had been abducted.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So.
And then there's been other times, for example, I was a single mother for many years when my children were very young. And my son was around 3 or 4 years old, and even before and after that, he would come to me in the morning and say, "Oh, Mommy, I'm so happy to see you." He says, "Where did you go last night? Where were you?" And I said, "Honey, I was in bed all night. What are you talking about?" He said, "No, I woke up in the night." He said, "Because I heard that scary beep-beep sound in my room, and because sometimes we hear this beeping sound or this high-pitched sound before they come or when they're around.
Mm.
And he said, you were gone. You weren't there. So apparently I was gone for quite some time, not in my bed, not anywhere in the house. Mm. He even checked in the backyard. And he would say I was gone. And I've had friends stay overnight at times who said that they saw a bright light during the night, went to call me in my room, but I wasn't in bed. They couldn't find me. Things like that.
Yeah. Hmm. So that's pretty much confirmation that something has happened and you have been physically missing, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about the black helicopters that have been harassing you.
I don't know who or what they are, but for some unknown reason to us, my children and I sometimes fear them, sometimes as much, and if not more, than the actual ships and things that happen to us.
Hmm.
They usually come after a night of something having had happened to us, and they will kind of fly around and circle or fly back and forth, and then they take off. We have no idea who they are. But I know that, for example, in Peachland, when we first moved to the Okanagan, we had neighbors after a night of something happening. The next morning, these black helicopters, three of them, all blacked out, black windows, no names, no numbers, nothing on the helicopters, flew so low above the house. It was at rooftop level that my nightie was actually flying up in the air. And, neighbors were screaming at me, like, are you okay? What's going on? And, yeah, no, take me away from here, take my children and I out of here. And, he was so close. I could have thrown a rock at it and, but at that time you don't think of things like that. You're just so terrified that you just want to get away from there.
Have you taken pictures of these helicopters?
No. In all honesty, I've been on a very low income for quite some time and didn't own a camera at the time.
Mm.
And even if I had a camera, for example, a woman, when we were, one time we had this thing happening to us where a ship was there physically and other people were seeing it. And a woman tried to take a picture of it with her brand new camera, and nothing would work. Vehicles shut off, cameras wouldn't work.
Mm.
A lot of times, for some reason, electrical things do not will not start.
Is this in the presence of a disc-shaped object or the helicopter?
This has been in the presence of ships.
Okay. So yeah, I've heard of that before. They say, why don't you take a picture of these UFOs? Although a lot of pictures have been taken of them, but it's more at a distance. If they're so close, everything just shuts off, and they believe it's the electromagnetic propulsion system of the craft that is affecting the cameras, the cars. Cars just shut right down.
Yeah.
And what I think is amazing is people, their car will shut down. Now, tell me if this has happened to you before. Your car will be running. The UFO comes over. Your car shuts down. They get out of the car. Their car's not running now, right?
No.
And they're standing outside the car, and when the UFO departs, the car starts up by itself. Now, I'm no mechanic, but I've had cars die on me before, believe me. But in my experience, once they die on you, they're not going to restart without human intervention.
You're right.
And I've never heard of a car starting by itself once it is, unless you get a remote starter. but this is what happens.
Yeah.
And has that happened to you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, again, with that experience, the Jeep wouldn't start. I was trying to turn the key, and nothing was happening. And I'm going, oh, my God, they're going to get to us. And, And then all of a sudden, you know, I kind of said a prayer, you know, please, God, let this car start. We've got to get out of here. And turned it once more. The car eventually did finally start. Mm. But when I looked on the road, did the U-way on the road to get back into town, they were coming at us towards the vehicle. And I looked, and they weren't there. There was nothing on the road. So to me, probably what happened is they had taken off already or whatever, and this is when that missing time happened, I guess, and that's why the vehicle would start.
Right. Now, not the helicopters, but the UFO.
Yes.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, how have your children, how many children do you have, by the way?
Well, I have three children, and two for sure have been involved.
They have been involved.
Oh, yes.
And how do you know that they have been involved?
Because those poor little munchkins, their things began around the same age, between 5 and 6 years old for both of them. And things like my son woke up with a perfect hole in his back near his spine one morning.
Mm.
I woke up to a blood-curdling scream, and it was him holding his back, trying to get to his back, just screaming. And when I looked, I couldn't believe what I saw. I could actually see inside. The weirdest part is, it's like it had been cut like a laser or something, like almost like with cattle mutilation. There was no blood on his sheets. There was no blood on his body, but it was fully opened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the size of a pea, of a large pea. So maybe probably even a bit bigger. So it was frightening. I took him to a doctor right away and said, you know, please tell me what's going on with my son. He woke up like this morning. I said, what's going on? He said, well, I don't know what this is. I'll have to have a look. And he's looking, and I can tell, like, he's just, like, looking at me like, is this child abuse? Is this this? Is it that? You know, all these things, scenarios are going through his head.
Right.
Just have to watch his body language to know what's going on in there.
Right.
And I thought, oh, brother, here we go again, you know? And finally he looks at me and he goes, you know, I'm not sure what this is, but I think we're just going to say that it could be chicken pox, and we're going to leave it at that. Well, my son starts laughing. And he goes, chicken pox? I have a hole in my back. You know? Anyway, so it took us quite a while to heal this one up. We had to put, you know, antibiotic cream on it. He gave him antibiotic pills to take. So that one took a while to heal up.
How old was your child at the time?
He was 9 years old, around 9, I believe, when that happened.
So even at 9 years old, he's questioning the doctor, saying, what are you, nuts? I got a hole in my back. Chickenpox.
Exactly. Like, come on. And it's like this other time, the children and I, all on the same day, same morning, I was the first one to wake up. I went to the washroom. I had blood in my urine, and I had this stench on my hands, on the palm of my hands. I tried vinegar. I tried tomato juice. I tried lemon juice. Nothing would get the smell off my hands. It was absolutely horrific. And next thing I know, my kids are waking up, and they're all, of course, Mommy, what is it? Better come see in the toilet. And both of them had blood in their urine. Both of them had the same stench on their hands. So I thought, well, this is too coincidental. This is too weird. We can't all three of us have this on at the same time. Something weird's going on. So went to see a doctor. They ran a bunch of tests, said, no, everything looks absolutely normal. There's no problem with the kidneys, no problems with the bladder. We don't know why this is happening and why it's happening to you, all three of you at the same time. But I'm sure it will go away. It's nothing to worry about.
Let's hope they go away.
Are they going to say?
Yeah.
But I do have some medical records that I've kept for myself, just for my own sanity, you know, like to prove to myself, look, you're not going crazy. This is really happening. This happened. You have a medical record. You have proof of tests. Just to say to myself, you're not crazy.
So you have
enough of that from other people.
You have questioned your own sanity before.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that is good, because the psychiatrists say if the truly insane person never questions their own sanity. So if you question your own sanity, you're all right, I guess. Mm-hmm. I have to stop one more time just to remind our listeners that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here out of Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. And it's 89.3 on your FM dial on your radio in the Detroit and Dearborn area, and WHFR.FM all over the rest of the world on your computer. So I'm David Twitchell, and this is We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Corina Sables, author of The Collectors. And she is a... has been an alien experiencer, or now some people like to call themselves experiencers and some abductees. What would you classify yourself, Karina?
An unwilling abductee.
Abductee, because some people feel that they are part of a bigger program, something grandioso, grander than themselves, they're participants in a greater experiment. And so they like to call themselves experiencers.
But I never agreed to participate in anything that would hurt my children or leave scars on our bodies, believe me.
Well, the book is called The Collectors. And tell our listeners why you've named it The Collectors.
I chose The Collectors because that is what these beings do. They collect everything from us, a piece of our blood, a piece of our skin. I've even woken up with a chunk of hair cut from my head. My children certainly didn't do it. They were too young to even think of something like that. Mm. And there was no one else in the house. So who else and what else is it? They collect sperm samples from men. They take eggs from our ovaries, and they even implant hybrids and remove them after three and a half months. I have this on medical records as well, where I was expecting a baby, and overnight there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they collect everything from us, but they take and they never ask. Yeah. You know, they don't care how we feel, how it hurts us, how it affects our lives forever. They just come and do what they need to do and leave again. I think they're just horrible. Maybe some people out there are having great, wonderful, angelic experiences. I'm happy for them. I'm glad. And I wish I was. But for my children and I have to be honest, it hasn't been a nice experience so far.
Yeah. I know that David... Dr. David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins both agree that these are very malevolent beings in what they are doing. And there are others that say just the opposite. They're very benevolent beings. And I believe that there's a little bit of both going on, possibly mm-hmm. different species. Mm-hmm. And it depends on who lucks out and gets the malevolent or benevolent ones, and who doesn't luck out and gets the malevolent ones, you know?
Yeah.
But I think they're all very indifferent to us. To them, we are like the animals in the jungle that we anesthetize and tag. And experiment on, take a little of their DNA, and they couldn't care less what happens to us because we're the lower animal. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I believe I mentioned exactly that might be one of the scenarios going on in my book, where they could be like our scientists and exactly doing that. So we're basically like lab rats. And they just, you know, tag us and watch us for the rest of our lives. But what we found is that it usually goes from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And the time span, when you're younger, they come around more often, especially when you're a teenager and in your 20s and 30s. As you get older, people think, you know, we keep hoping, oh, they won't come around anymore because this, because that, because I'm too old. Well, I got news for people. They still come around. Mm. It doesn't matter how old you are or what's happened. I think, you know, they're with us until the day we die, just to watch how we react to things and the things that we happen to do.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, I've heard stories of UFOs hovering over graveyards and beams of light coming down in graveyards and that type of thing. And we think, just like you say, they're with us till the day we die. Is it possible, if this is true, if they're checking out the graveyards and what have you, is it possible that they have tagged us and that's we have these
implants,
and all of a sudden, you know, they can't find us at home, so they look for the implant, and the implant has been implanted in the ground along with our body, and then, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I never even thought of that, but that's a good point, because I believe, you know, like, if they want to, they even if our implants are removed, and it has been known that people have had their implants removed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for some reason or other, they've been known to come back and implant that person again, just in a different area.
Right.
So yeah.
We had Dr. Roger Lear on the show before, mm-hmm. and he's talked about the aliens and the scalpel,
mm-hmm.
and taking these implants out, and the fact that the skeptic or the scientist is going to look at these implants and say everything that's in the implant, in this metallic implant or this metallic piece, can be found on the earth, all of this metal. But what they don't tell you is that there are compounds, there are alloys of metal that our metallurgists, easy for me to say, say cannot be mixed. You can't put this and that together. And yet here it is in the same piece of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't tell you that part. How did they get them together?
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Well, and not just that, but I've often heard that some of the implants which have been removed also were noticed to have a certain radio frequency or things about it that it could only come from out there. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's not an earthly thing.
Right. The subspace, subspace radio frequency.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And why? Why would they? And it's only when the implant is connected to a nerve in the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
Once that according to Dr. Lair, once that nerve has been severed and the implant taken out, the signal ceases.
Yes.
So it's like a the old crystal sets.
Yeah.
You know, once it's hooked up to the once the crystal has been hooked up to the copper wire, it picks up the radio signal, and you take that copper wire off, and it does not. It's just a dead crystal again.
Mm-hmm.
And fascinating, you know, but and frightening at the same time. So, have you had reason to believe that you have been implanted?
At one time, I was so certain. I could point in my head to two different areas and go, if somebody were to look in there, in that area, they would find something. I know there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't want anyone going in my brain, thank you, unless they really have to. But I do remember an implant coming out of my daughter's forehead area when she was younger, and this thing looked very, very different than anything I've ever seen before. It was almost like a piece of selenite. Have you ever seen the crystal called selenite?
Oh, yeah.
So it was like a piece of broken off selenite, but here comes the weird part, and I know this is hard to believe, but it had appendages on them, like veins through it, and that was come out of this thing. It had about, I think it was four appendages. And I thought, whoa, this is just too weird. I'm putting this in a plastic bag, going to put it away for a while, and I'm going to think about who I'm going to send it to.
Mm.
And, you know, here we go again. I hate to say it because I know what people are going to say out there. So, oh, yeah, here we go. But I did put it in a brown envelope, and I did mail it off to somebody in the U.S., and I never heard back. And when I did contact them about it, they said they never got it.
That's right. That's right. Do you remember who?
I know this sounds horrible, but it's the truth. As God's my witness.
I believe you completely, because these pieces of evidence, when it comes to UFO cases, you send them. You think you're doing the right thing. You send them to the authorities, and they fall off the face of the earth. Nobody knows nothing from nothing. You know,
mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is that they have a find here, and they're not going to share that with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And do you recall who you sent it to?
Yes, I do.
Speak up. And, who is it?
I do, but I prefer not to say right now. We have spoken on the phone off and on for several years.
Is this a trusted person?
Yes, it is. Oh, absolutely. I would trust him with my life.
And you sent this person this alleged implant suspected implant.
Yeah.
And the person said they never got it.
That's right.
Okay. Now, that's a different story. It's very, you know, I'm not accusing your friend of anything, because very often you send it to, say, the FBI or the CIA, and they'll say, we didn't get nothing, you know. But you send it to a friend and that you trust, and perhaps it's intercepted en route.
Well, the thing is, this sounds like Hollywood stuff, but my phone has been tapped in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can do that, I'm thinking, well, can they also affect your postal things? You know, like, can they get to your mail?
Oh,
probably.
My God, yeah. Certainly. And if they know, if you've got these black helicopters circling you, then someone in earthly authorities knows what's going on with you. They're keeping they can't keep track of E.T., but they can keep track of you.
Right.
And they're going to, they're probably tapping this line right now. And, you know, I hate to scare you, but if they're tapping your line, they're tapping your line.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, I'm not afraid of them. You know, this is going out all over the world.
Well, I'm like you. I'm at an age now and a time in my life where, you know what, I don't care anymore.
That's right.
People can think what they want. I know what we've experienced, and there's no reason for me to lie. It doesn't get me anything. If anything, we've had nothing but losses in our lives because of these beings doing what they did to us. We've lost health. We've lost financial freedom. We've lost friends, family members. I mean, you lose everything.
Yeah.
You know, you're ridiculed. It's not something. It's not some club you want to belong to. No way.
That is right.
And these people that say, "Oh, I wish it was happening to me," or "You just want 5 minutes of fame." Hello, please wake up. Smell the coffee. If this was really you going through some of this, if you'd seen the pictures, if you'd heard your children cry like I have with mine, and things like that, no, you don't want to be a part of this.
God bless you, Karina.
Oh, thanks.
God bless you. I tell you, once again, your website is?
TheCollectorsOnline.com. And I can be reached at spiritlight@shaw.ca. If anybody needs to talk regarding their experiences or ask any questions, I would be more than happy to talk with them and take the time to email with them.
Very good. And once again, the book is called The Collectors by Karina Sables. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
Wow. See, I knew I could say collectors. No, I'm kidding. Karina Sables, I want to thank you so very much for joining us today. And
well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I hope we can do this again sometime. Do you have any thought of putting out book number two?
Actually, I'm working on it.
Are you really?
Yes.
Ah, the sequel. Do you have any interest in seeing that movie, The Fourth Kind?
Oh, you bet. Oh. I have to go see it.
Well, I think it would scare the bejesus out of you.
Yeah, it probably will, but you know, I have to, sometimes I need that to say to myself, Karina, you're really not the only one. You're not going crazy. This is real. Other people have experienced it. And I want to see if there are any similarities.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, good night. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at BlackBaltRadioNetwork.com, as well as at my website, UFOImplications.com. And I want to wish all our loyal listeners a very safe and happy holiday season and a very Merry Christmas. And stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit hour renewable energy certificate program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Hello and welcome to this first day in December to One Chord to Another. I'm your host, Jeff, here every Tuesday playing new and slightly used indie rock and pop for your listening enjoyment. Can you believe it? Time is really flying. It's going to almost be Christmas and New Year's before you know it. But, well, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I've got a great show to get to today, and let me give a little thanks to everyone who's listening to the show right now. First up today, I have a song by the band Sloan giving you a little thanks. This is Jay Ferguson singing on